David Prude and Vesta Goddars. I'm Amy Goodman. Our website, democracynow.org.
This is Donna with your WUSB Concert Billboard. Your Concert Billboard for Wednesday, April 29th. Sydney Swenson will be at the Grey Horse Tavern in Bayport, 8 p.m. Q, Kyle Horn, and Danny Leonard will be at the LIC Bar in Queens. James Maddock Band will be at Le Poisson Rouge, Manhattan, 9 p.m. On your concert billboard for Thursday, April 30th, the Iris Sessions will be at the Grey Horse Tavern in Bayport, 8 p.m. Alexis P. Suter Band will be at Iridium, 8:30. Sophie B. Hawkins will be at the Rockwood Music Hall, Stage 3, 8:30. Your WUSB Concert Billboard for Friday, May 1st. Willie Nile will be at the Rubin Museum of Art, Manhattan, 7 p.m. Tom Russell will be at Midtown Live, Manhattan, at 8. The DeLoreans will be at the Parrot in Bayport, 8:30. The Carrie Carney Band will be at Swing the Teapot in Floral Park, 9:30. Dan Finnerty and the Dan Band will be at Joe's Pub, Manhattan, 10 p.m. Noah's Ark will be at the Brick House in Patchogue, 10 p.m.
Hi, this is Jim Wiener, co-host of Jazz on the Air, heard Sunday afternoons between 2:30 and 5 here on WUSB. This has been your concert billboard. Check out the online version at WUSB.fm.
Hey, and it's WUSB Stony Brook. The time is 6 o'clock on a Tuesday night, and 6 o'clock and 22 seconds on a Tuesday night, and that means one thing. That means it's time for Off the Wall. And it's going to start right now, as soon as the CD player cooperates. And there it is.
Thank you.
Good evening. All right, here we are.
Here we are. Wow. What? Where? What?
Off the wall. You're listening to it.
Yes. Yes, indeed you are. And, you know, can I just step in and defend you here, Kyle, because the problem you had with the theme before was really not your fault. What?
It wasn't the CD player's fault either.
Okay, you know, it wasn't. You're right. It was the fault of... I wish there was video here, because then we could document this.
We would have document
basically,
evidence.
Okay, yeah. A radio station has a console, and there are different channels on the console, and you basically bring, like right now we have two microphones brought up, and we have the theme brought up a little bit in the background.
It's called a bed in radio parlance.
It's called a bed, but it's called a pot as far as what you turn up and down.
Short, yeah, these are not vertical sliders.
Potentiometers.
Right? Yeah, they're round.
What you do is you put the pot in program if you want to air it over the radio. You put it in audition if you want to audition it, you know, have it in a different mode so that you can preview something before you put it on. Okay, so there's a switch that goes from audition to program. It goes audition, neutral, program. That switch on both turntables has broke off years ago.
Completely broken off.
This board, Kyle, is older than you.
It's very much older than me.
And so, you know, it's an easy thing to switch from audition to neutral to program when there's a switch there. When there isn't a switch there, what you have to do is you have to press it with your thumb and get a little scar when you do it, because you're literally moving a piece of metal that's almost flush to the board and trying to shift that from one thing to another. And what you weren't aware of, and there's no way you could be aware of it because it's almost invisible, was that it was not in program. Somebody, for some reason, decided to take the pot that doesn't have the switch on top and move it to a different mode so that the only way to get it to play would be to grind your thumb into it and move it over. And Kyle came in here innocently thinking that this would not be a world where that was the way it was left. And so you tried to play a theme that was playing to nothing.
So, for several seconds. And I was going to even tell the time down to the seconds. I got all flustered.
You had
looking
it all planned
that up.
Out. You were practicing on the drive over and in the hallway coming in.
I was trying to do things quickly, and I noticed everything was on time as far as our concert calendar and everything with the station.
And that doesn't happen very often.
Timing's important. Yeah, we were almost to the... we were within 10 seconds of the hour, basically. And I was really trying to get it
That's
right
like having
on.
Two eclipses in one night. That does not happen often.
Yeah, and so that I couldn't see it at all. And the last thing I finally realized, the switch was, it was in queue and it needed to be in program.
And look at that indentation on your thumb. You're pressing into that metal. That's something. I mean,
ow.
Shouldn't have to do that.
I just hit it too. So, and to my credit, I was so perturbed with the whole situation and... I was going to restart. So I'm glad I didn't restart the track.
I saw you reaching for the stop button.
I almost did it.
Yeah, I was like, that would not be...
And I left my mic up for a good, couple seconds. And I easily could have done the real rookie mistake. I could have used forbidden words and gotten really flabbergasted. And it could have ruined the whole thing, way more than it was already ruined.
However bad it may be, it could have been worse. And this is the thrill of live radio. You never know what's going to happen next. So if you go back and you listen to the beginning of the program, you can hear Kyle with his microphone on being perturbed.
Thinking,
not saying anything, but obviously agitated.
Thinking very much forbidden words and internalizing some of that. But you can also hear me slowly turning my microphone down.
And I have to confess that I was sitting here watching this whole thing unfold, and I could have stepped forward and basically said, yeah, this needs to be done that way, and your mic's still on. But for some reason, and I apologize for this, I decided to play the role of the audience and just kind of watch what happened.
I'm glad
is that,
I did.
Is that bad? Is that wrong? Does that make me a evil person?
It's fight or flight, and, you know, sink or swim, and sometimes you got to just let go a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through the entire process. I've already stormed out of the studio in my head and gave up on the entire show.
You're in the parking lot already.
I'm way, way, way the heck off campus by now. I mean, just mentally, I've already stepped away from that eventuality, that ledge, that mental ledge, and I'm actually back here ready to have a good show, actually.
Yes, let's try that for a change. Let's try to have a good show.
Good timing and everything. Mm-hmm. The real professional things you come to expect from WUSB Stony Brook and the fine folks at Off the Wall.
And that, neither of those statements was sarcasm, because we do expect professionalism here at the radio station and at Off the Wall. And we hear it quite a bit. In fact, we've been listening to the station a lot lately and hearing all kinds of cool things. That I heard an interview with a band yesterday. We hear all kinds of people. A lot more talking. I like talking on the radio. That's why I do a talk show. But I like when people engage in the music and not just, you know, play 45 minutes of music and then say that was this and that was that and here's some more of that. You know, it's, come on, your iPod could do that. But to hear people interviewing bands, to hear people discussing things amongst themselves, to hear people analyzing the news and getting into the music and talking about it and teaching and learning, too, from various people that they may be talking to. That is the thrill of live radio, and that's something I've seen a lot more of here recently.
Inviting bands through, inviting other people, you know, cramming the studio.
I don't know. Where do they put the band? Because there's barely enough room in here for you and me.
We do have a concert space at the station here at WUSB. It's a conference /
really? You call that a concert space?
Well, you could perform in there. I mean, there's more room. I don't know where you would put any kind of big instruments like a drum.
Put a boombox in there, maybe. I don't know what other instrument you could fit in
but
there.
But needless to say, there's mic inputs, and you know you can do a mic'd sessions, uh-huh, as it were, and you can have someone in here as a directly core, you know, running the engineering side with the ability to see the performance, you know, the artist, mm-hmm, through the soundproof glass. It's like, you know, I think the ideal of the way this was designed.
And it was designed that way.
We are getting into this, too. We're excited about new spaces and all that, and designing a radio station is an interesting thing. It there's little nuances to it and things that help define what a space is. So I would see that as more of a performance space, because, mm-hmm, you can patch it in with a bunch of mixers. It's a much bigger space. You might have to move a table or something. But you could also have a larger talk show. You could have like several people in there talking.
Oh, yes.
And I think that was what it was
originally
for.
That room, yeah, was bigger. We actually, when we expanded the library in back, we had to build a wall to make it a little bit smaller. So, yeah, we kind of did it to ourselves. But you know what? Yeah, as Kyle said, we're talking about new spaces, and this building is going to be gutted, and we don't intend to be gutted with it. We intend to be someplace else. Talks are ongoing as to where to put us. You know, there's concern as to us getting a good space. I think people are optimistic. I did see them digging a pit on the other side of campus, and the rumor is that that is where they want us to go. If that is in fact the case, we will appeal and try and have them see reason so that we have a good facility so we can continue to bring you decent material and better material and be more flexible as to what the kinds of things we can do, because that's the joy of radio, is being able to say switch to a different studio if we need to maintain one, to be able to patch something in and have a performance studio that we can broadcast live from. It really does make a difference in the sound.
Yeah, and you got to engineer, you got to design your environment that supports all the kinds of cool stuff you want to do. So it's definitely, we're looking at this kind of springtime cleaning moment and saying, hey, what can we do without? How could we better use our own space and provide a reason? Because it really, when it works, it works. When you get a lot of people together, musicians, DJs, people that are interested in conversation.
You have the CD player on repeat.
CD players that repeat.
And yeah, we're hearing the theme a second time. Can we gracefully fade that away? No, I guess we can't gracefully fade it away. It's here to stay. There you go. Okay, nice and smooth. Go ahead.
Anyway, you can have CD players that are more noticeable when they're in repeat and that kind of thing. You know, it's important. But there's a lot of stuff here that just doesn't get used. There's a remote tape deck starter.
Oh,
I could start the tape deck from here. Nobody uses it.
The TEC cassette remote, yeah.
What is it?
Well, it was installed so firmly that we can't get it out now, even though we don't have that tape deck anymore. And there's that red button. Well, actually, don't hit that red button.
It's crazy. No, that is supposed to be for the delay, which needs work. And that
does work. That does work.
Right.
Thank God for that. But there's all kinds of other buttons. But the point is, things do need to be upgraded, replaced, and expanded.
So we're due here at the station, and there's a lot of excitement for that. And as a result, we've been paying attention to a lot of the programming. We just finished up the spring fundraiser.
Spring Radiothon is over. Thank you, everybody who called in and pledged during our show and pledged during the entire Radiothon. It's great to see the support from listeners, and without you, we couldn't do most of the things that we do. That's for damn sure. But keep tuned, because we'll be doing all kinds of interesting projects in the future, and we'd love for you to be a part of that as well. We've been doing some fun things here on campus as well. Last night, a surprise. I had no idea this was going on. Just found out about it through USB people, in fact, that Neil deGrasse Tyson was speaking here, from a host of Cosmos, astrophysicist, the director of the Hayden Planetarium in New York. Awesome guy, and he gave an incredible talk on campus that I found out about literally a couple hours before it happened. And it's just the kind of thing that happens at Stony Brook. All of a sudden, you'll find out that somebody you really idolize is on campus and doing something cool. That's the thing with an academic institution. We talked last week about some objectionable speech or just a phrase that rubbed me the wrong way, paying tribute to victims of the Israeli invasion last year and completely neglecting the Palestinians. Well, that's, it's great to be able to say that, to be able to say this is wrong, you guys need to correct this, and to know that there is a dialogue going on campus. That's what an academic institution should be about, is a bit of controversy and a lot of dialogue and all kinds of education going on. The things that Neil deGrasse Tyson said last night, though, were so inspirational. And I think it spoke to both of us. He was talking about the importance of grades and how they aren't important at all.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was – I couldn't tell from where we were sitting. But he pointed to somebody in the front row and said, you, sir, you're the oldest person in this row. Come up to the stage. When was the last time somebody asked you what your GPA was? That might have been the president of the university. I'm not sure if it was. There's no way I could tell. But it was just kind of cool that that particular point was made. It's something that is dear to my heart because my GPA was not that good, and I know yours wasn't that great either.
No, it was not the best GPA. Not something you would – it was something I fought for. I really struggled, and it was truly the aggregate of all of my education that allowed me to complete my undergraduate work and stuff like that. And that's it's an important thing to a lot of people at the time. And directs you to different institutions as far as where you go, but it really doesn't have a huge bearing on your life. And I think the way he articulated it that was beautiful was that it is framed in a way that it doesn't define you, and it is in the moment, it is a test, and he talked about standardized testing as well, but it is not a reflection of your capacity to continue to learn. You may not know something, all of it, in one instance, but when you look at the entirety of your life and your adult life and the concept of continuing to learn, continuing education and adult learning, those things you're constantly exposed to them in your life all the time, and that the ability for people to change and continue to grow and learn, I think that emphasis, that really hit home with me, because I struggled, I fought, I was, I marched up there and grabbed that the diploma, as it were, at least symbolically for me, the confidence that I had worked really hard to get through a lot of challenging stuff. And there's a lot of students that have to work really hard, and I think fight as much for the recognition.
And it's just too much emphasis placed on numbers, on scores and things like that. And
totally.
It basically turns people off to, I think, what we both got out of higher education is the learning aspect of it. I learned more from classes that I got C's and D's in. And I even failed a couple of classes.
Oh, yeah.
And I learned from those classes too. And that's what you really want to take out of a college education or a high school education or any kind of education, is that learning process, is expanding your mind and getting better at things. That's something else, yeah, that that he did touch upon, to be told that you're not good at a particular subject. Okay, you might not be good at it right now. Next year, you'll be better at it if you keep studying, if you keep learning. He brought up Chinese as an example. You know, how many people here take I took Chinese at Stony Brook.
Yeah.
How many people take Chinese aren't very good at it? Well, there's a billion people in the world that speak it, so obviously you can get better. You know, you just have to keep at it. And the idea of taking a course, not because it's easy.
Yes,
taking
diluting.
A course because it's hard, because
yeah,
it's something
yeah.
that you will get better at. That's a challenge to you. But if everything is about GPAs, you're going to take the easy classes. Now, somebody who has a 4.0 GPA and took a bunch of easy classes, are they a better student than somebody who has, say, a 2.5 and took a bunch of hard classes and really expanded their mind?
There's just to threw their hat over the wall and just absolutely challenge themselves mm-hmm. and push themselves a lot further. It's a really important thing to do, because you're deluding yourself if you're taking a lot of the easier courses. You to have failed and to really push yourself to go beyond what you know, to be ambitious for your own intellectual stimulation is, I think, a better experience, because you do learn that, yeah, you know what, I have to work at this if I want to master it, and things aren't just as like a beautiful picture, right, that I'm painting with easy classes, mm-hmm. kind of handpicking my way through. Yes, you navigate school. Of course, you're gonna give yourself a break when you're scheduling your quarters or your semesters. But at the same time, it's absolutely worthwhile to have those failings and to do things that, wow, you know, you learn, I'm not good at this. That's a lot of, I think, what people realize when they start working and they try different jobs. They realize things they aren't really good at, or they don't want to do, or and are motivated to find other things that they excel at and work a little bit harder at the things that that perhaps may take that work, but you know, in the end, will be more fruitful because it excites them and it's something that they're interested in doing, instead of sort of something being drudgery in their lives.
Yeah,
but there were so many points like that I really agree with. It was a really important thing to hear.
It was, and you know, I wish more people could hear it. I've been asking about this. Turns out they didn't record it, and I don't know if the reason they didn't record it is because that's the condition for him speaking. If that's the case, I really don't like that. I don't like when people say you can't record what I say. You know, so many people would benefit from that. Sure, you might say the same thing to a different crowd of people some other time. It doesn't demean it at all. I don't know if that's the reason. I don't know if somebody just forgot to hit record. But for God's sake, people, when historic things like this happen, we got to capture the moments and we got to share the moments. We'd love to broadcast this over the radio and just have it in an archive someplace. So many moments like that happen, and they're just as relevant 20, 30 years down the road as they are the day they happened. So I hope that's another learning experience that we can go through based on that, is to capture these moments and to continue to learn from them.
And nobody out there better be like wagging the finger at us, because don't you dare think it did not cross our minds to grab an audio package and go and record this.
They wouldn't have let. They even had a thing at the beginning saying no pictures. Anyone takes a picture, you'll be escorted out. Why? What is with this anti-photography kick that everybody seems to be on lately? You know, we see it at conferences that we go to. A lot of hacker conferences, they take a very hostile view towards people taking pictures, which, you know, I can understand if you're taking a picture of a person and you're getting in their way and you're bugging them. Yeah, that's harassment. But if you're taking a picture of, say, a crowd of people in a public place, that's not the same thing. And I just don't think we should be acting as if we are being exposed by being seen where we are. You know, we're in the public eye anyway, we're out there. So unless somebody is actually getting in your face and bugging you, it's not something to get bent out of shape about. I just see it happening way too often, you know, taking pictures in streets, you know, people getting upset at that. You see documentaries, all these people with fuzzed out faces because they couldn't get releases from these complete total strangers that are walking down the street. It's insanely paranoid to think this way. and to try and get licensing for every single note of a song that somebody might be playing out of their car as they drive by? Or do you have permission to take a picture of the building across the street? Is Google going to rat you out because they're going to see an image that you didn't get clearance for? We're going insane with these regulations and rules and restrictions, and we need to stop that. Let's be open about recording, about capturing, but at the same time, respecting our privacy. You know, the real threat to us is the analysis and the capturing of our data by authorities. And that's not something that a photographer is going to be doing. A photographer is capturing what's going on in the street, in buildings, things like that. To capture people's the phone numbers they call or even the conversations they have or to be monitoring where they go, that's very, very different. There's nothing artistic about that. That's surveillance, and that's very, very different. And I don't think we should be treating individual people who are simply trying to find interesting scenery and events. We should not be treating them the same way that we treat the Orwellian agents of our society that are everywhere.
Yeah, I certainly think like we've moved a lot. Like the swell of cheap cameras has definitely moved us to a place where people are more conscious of location-based tagging on digital photos and the kinds of information that people's devices are creating with really no indication to them. I think the carelessness and tact has changed a bit. People are a lot more conscious of what they're doing as far as when they photograph someone else or when they generate the data itself. And the social tact of like when to, you know, selfies are a thing now and there are ways of being distasteful with that. And I mean, I grew up with that being self-portraiture, right? And as a genre of photography. And so it's the mainstreaming and of this wide array of consumer devices that you can capture images with is we've reacted, and I think people have learned a lot. But at the same time, I'm also really ashamed of this weird era of puffery and self-importance that people have around their image and their likeness, because we are surveyed constantly in all countries you go to and on private and governmental and corporate databases. Your image is everywhere. If someone really wanted to get a picture, a 3D picture of you, there's certainly ways to do it to render your likeness. And I did see a lot of that at an event like that. I mean, it was sort of fun to go back to school a bit and experience an event with other students. And they did tell people quite clearly that if they see a camera of some a photograph being taken in the audience, that they're going to confiscate or otherwise escort you, like basically kick you out if you do any kind of photographing. So people, regardless, there's tons of students there. They all have devices, incredibly complex devices. I mean, if you could harness all the processing power that was in that room in people's devices, I mean, it just added up. It's crazy. But they respected it. And I mean, I've seen this enforced at like amateur porn film festivals and, you know, things like that where there's a lot of sensitivity. But a casual conversation.
That's like the one valid example I can think of.
Yeah, I mean, it's a thing. If the Hump Festival in Seattle, I went to that.
Hump Festival in the amateur porn.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, fine. You know, I guess you don't want to be seen in that audience, maybe. But you know,
well, they asked that the producers and the talent have asked that they not have stuff leaked and otherwise posted while it's being released at a film festival. And I think a lot of film festivals, a lot of pre-release stuff that people are working on, you know, you can have those kinds of policies if it's sensitive, if it's someone's, you know, literally bare in front of you for their art. I mean, that can be an understanding, and that sort of running to grab someone's phone and threatening to take it as a policy, there are circumstances I can understand that, but to just sort of accept it as students, I hardly believe that if someone didn't want to take a photo during that, or they could have just had their phone recording, I'm sure someone could have got a copy. But as far as actually publishing it for posterity and having a good copy, I mean, that's where a radio station, that's where people that really care about archiving should have flexibility. And that's what I mean by shameful at this point. As a photographer, I'm pretty disgusted with who and how I'd have to posture to be allowed to do what I do. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of crap that you'd have to wade through just to capture things and be artistic. And that's, it's really shameful that we, and there's a lot of shaming involved. I think that's why I use that word sort of in reflection, because the amount of shaming that goes on with people that are innocently taking a photo, it's construed with the surveillance state, and it is completely separate. And you're really attacking people that want to show in artistic ways the amazing things that you're doing. And I think that gets lost.
It's weird because, you know, I see both ends of this. I'm sick of everybody always capturing every single moment and taking pictures everywhere you go and basically logging where they are and where they're going to go and what their plans are and what their thoughts are. But at the same time, I'm super into archiving things. It's just a question of quality, I guess. You know, people who know what they're doing should not be prevented from doing it because everybody else is trying to do the same thing. Basically, you know, I think we can just weed out the crap and just live our lives and assume that people will, I don't know, do something with a degree of respect. But to tell people you're not allowed to take pictures in a public place, or you're not allowed to capture this, or this cannot be repeated, it might be something that's appropriate for a corporation inside, you know, ultra secret government agencies, things like that. They don't want people to disclose things, but we're talking about public events now. We're talking about places where thousands of people are. Imagine, you know, going to a baseball game and being told that you can't take a picture of anything going on in the field unless you get the permission of the commissioner of baseball. You know, that's almost as ridiculous as that.
Yeah. And, you know, it was worth what it was worth to go live. But as far as content, I mean, I don't know to do that in to the detriment of spreading good information and challenging ideas, I think we lose out. And you know, I paid what I paid for that to see it live. But as far as a digital copy or an audio version, is it really worth as much or less? Would I, you know, is that like a 99-cent download bit of content? No, that is something you promote, that you want to share with the world and have other people get in on as an experience. And I really don't think at his core, like a person like Neil deGrasse Tyson is really that interested in protecting his story for the event. But who knows?
Yeah, well, I don't think it would be him anyway. It would be somebody representing him. And obviously he wants to communicate and share and inspire. And,
exactly.
And you want to be able to get to as many people as possible. So that should not be something that's restricted. And well, I'm not even sure that's what's going on. But if it was, you know, it needs a rethink as far
yeah,
as.
Maybe somebody's got a copy and we just don't know about it yet. But yeah, it was a fantastic event.
It really was.
It was really cool. And there were some great ideas challenging concepts of higher education and what it really means to learn and continue to learn in your life. So,
yeah. Well, you know, speaking of baseball, there's going to be a baseball game tomorrow. Are you talking to somebody else? Am I distracting you?
No, we're all trying to listen to what you have to say.
So.
You know, I don't know why you keep interrupting yourself.
There are two of us in the room, and you're talking to a glass. Okay.
Again, with the accusations.
Yeah, well, all right. There's going to be a baseball game tomorrow in Baltimore with nobody in the stands. This is how they're dealing with rioting crowds. They're going to – you can't not have the game. Well, they're not having the game tonight apparently. But tomorrow they're going to have the game. They're going to have it in the afternoon, but they're not going to allow anybody. That's going to be a weird game to watch. They do that occasionally in soccer games when crowds go nuts. Usually – the soccer crowds are the ones going nuts, so they're not allowed to go in. But this, the entire city, they're not allowing anybody to go in, baseball fans or not.
So that's like got to be a really lonely game for the players. They don't have anyone there watching. It's like
they're completely
isolated.
It's the bottom of ninth inning, bases loaded. You hit a home run for the home team, and nobody's Nobody's saying anything. What, are they going to play the crowd?
Yeah, they'll play recordings of crowds screaming.
I mean, you know, your teammates will be there, sure. But you know what? They'll make as much noise as the other team when they hit a home run. It's going to be really, really weird.
That is going to be very odd.
The thing is, I want to record that, but I don't think I can without subscribing to a whole package of sports that I don't want. So hopefully somebody will air that over the air somewhere so I can just see it. It's going to be really kind of bizarre and weird.
Right.
But also, you know, on the subject of Baltimore, we're going to talk about Baltimore a bit.
Yes.
There was an article that came out in The Atlantic, excuse me, and it's called What to Say When the Police Tell You to Stop Filming Them, kind of in line with what we're talking about here. This article, you know what, I think this article just came out. It says,
okay.
I don't know what it is with websites. It's a great article in The Atlantic. It says 9:06 a.m. ET, but it doesn't give the date. It just gives the – why is time more important than the date? You know, this happens so many times with news stories where they don't tell you when it came out. And not only that, but they refer to each other. Like you're reading something in Newsday, and then one of the sidebars is hurricane on the way. And it's a story from like 3 years ago, but for some reason, because they're talking about weather and trees,
right.
It relates to that story. So there you go. You see something that makes you panic. Or you find out that, oh, my God, this person died. And then you find out they died 2 years ago and you just didn't know about it. Ridiculous things like that. No, you have to do is file it by date, you know, and keep track of it that way.
It should be law. It should be law.
It should
that
be.
In the top of an article, the date, everything has to be accurate.
We mastered this in the paper world. Libraries, they have dates on things. Put a damn date on your stories, all right? Sorry.
It wouldn't hurt. Yeah.
All right. So anyway, this is from a 9:06 a.m. Atlantic story from God knows when. I think it might be today because people were talking about it today. This guy, a chairman of Washington, D.C.'s Metropolitan Police Unit, Delroy Burton.
Okay.
He's also a 21-year-old veteran – not 21-year-old, 21-year veteran on the force – he says, as a basic principle, we can't tell you to stop recording. If you're standing across the street videotaping and I'm in a public place, me being a police officer,
right.
Carrying out my public functions, then I'm subject to recording. And there's nothing legally the police officer can do to stop you from recording. Just believing you're being recorded all the time.
Yeah.
Kind of like what we were talking about with people being in public places, too. Imagine you're being recorded. You probably are being recorded by something somewhere. So it's not worth getting bent out of shape about.
Exactly.
Especially cops.
That was my point. Sure, yeah.
He continues, what you don't have a right to do is interfere. Record from a distance. Stay out of the scene. The officer doesn't have the right to come over and take your camera or confiscate it. Officers do have a right to tell you to stop interfering with their work, but they still aren't allowed to destroy film. Yet, and this is the article now, mm-hmm. Yet some officers still do.
Right.
Last week, an amateur video appeared to show a U.S. Marshal confiscating and destroying a woman's camera as she filmed him. According to Jay Stanley, who is a senior policy analyst at the ACLU, photography is a form of power, and people are loath to give up power, including police officers.
Mm.
It's a power struggle where the citizen is protected by the law, but because it is a power struggle, sometimes that's not enough. Now, Jay Stanley wrote the ACLU's Know Your Rights Guide for Photographers.
Mm-hmm.
It basically lays out in plain language the legal protections that are assured for people filming in public.
Yep.
Among these, photographers can take pictures of anything in plain view from public space, including public officials, but private landowners may set rules for photography on their property. And I think that's an important distinction. On their property, not of their property. I can take a picture of a house if I like the way it looks, if I'm standing in the street.
Right.
You can't tell me you're not allowed to take a picture of this building because it's historic or because it's a landmark or something like that.
Or because it's patented.
Yeah, there are people who will tell you that. There are people in New York City who will say, you can't take a picture of this building unless you pay a fee because it's a landmark.
We even
have that in Freedom Downtime in our film. Somebody tried to tell us we couldn't take a picture. Actually, we were inside the building at the time, so maybe they had a point. But the thing is, we took a picture of a prison from across the street. This kind of thing is allowed. You can do this, but they will tell you that you cannot. So private landowners can set rules for photography on their property, sure.
No, that's a good emphasis there.
And cops also cannot confiscate or demand to view audio or video without a warrant. And they can't ever, ever, ever delete images. Yet they do all the time. Now, in the majority of situations, An officer is just trying to intimidate you and stop your recording. Once you make it clear to the officer that you do know what your rights are and that you don't intend to be intimidated, in the vast majority of situations, the officer will back down. Now, this guy, Daniel Sanchez, organizer for Cop Watch in the Bronx, he recommends a slightly different tactic. We train volunteers to calmly respond, "I'm just exercising my constitutionally protected right to document police activity." Now, most officers now know that bystanders have a legal right to film police. And instead of hearing assertions that they can't record at all, he says Cop Watch volunteers are being accused of interfering with police activity, being told that they're in the way. That's why it's important to be across the street or
Keep a distance, stick with a group of other people, you know, that kind of stuff. Definitely. Common sense as much as you can. Try not to get too close.
Yeah. Now, referring back to that ACLU guide, if stopped for photography, the right question to ask is, "Am I free to go?" If the officer says no, then you are being detained, something that under the law an officer cannot do without reasonable suspicion that you have or are about to commit a crime or in the process of doing so. Until you ask to leave, your being stopped is considered voluntary under the law and is legal. So it's important to remember these things. It's something that cops have to remember, something civilians have to remember. They say, going back to the chairman of the D.C. Metropolitan Police Union, in the District of Columbia and in places like Boston, where there are so many cameras in public places, there's almost nowhere you can go without being recorded. So we tell our officers that's the way you should behave all the time, as if you're being recorded. And, it kind of sucks that...
That's how I behave.
Well, I mean, do you want to behave like you're always being recorded? I don't want to behave that way. I want to be able to be spontaneous and occasionally irresponsible and not have to always answer for my actions. But we live in a society now where we're being scrutinized constantly, inside our homes, outside our homes, in the streets. It's that in itself can be unhealthy.
Yeah, no, I am with you on that. I think that you should be able to be free. You know, don't be encumbered by the feeling that that you couldn't have a slight or a misstep or not be yourself for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. I mean, there's definitely something lost in truly acting as though you're, I mean, again, like going down sort of a paranoid line of thought with that.
Yeah.
So.
I'm torn. I believe in accountability for public servants, public officials, but privacy for individuals. But at the same time, there are times when things being captured, just randomly, is in the better interest of justice. We see that many, many times. But also, we see how that affects who we are as individuals. And we just should never live in fear of always being watched and monitored. And having that prevent us from expressing ourselves, from being who we truly are, that's something that we have to be very careful of. But at the same time, we need to hold people accountable who are basically entrusted with a lot of power and people who abuse that power. We have seen that so many times in all of these instances that that have come to the forefront over the last year or so and beyond that as well. There has been some kind of video capturing to prove something that was being denied, to show something that the case in South Carolina recently where you see a cop actually shooting somebody in the back as they're running away and completely contrary to the story that he told. You see this kind of thing a lot these days because there are people around recording things and because there are many different surveillance devices out there. If we have access to them and we can show that this is in fact what happened. So it's basically a tool. It's something that has become very important in the pursuit of justice. And that leads to reaction. Now, I'd like to know, and maybe we can take some phone calls on this.
Sure. Yeah.
Is anybody surprised by what's been happening in Baltimore? Because I'm not. If you basically do the kinds of things to individual people that that has been done repeatedly. And in this particular case, we have somebody who was basically thrown into a van and later mysteriously had a severed spinal cord and died of their injuries. And to this day, that has not been explained. There are six cops involved here, and they have not given their story. Now, I don't think you can do that as a civilian. I don't think you can get away with that without something being said, without being identified. I'm not sure if they've been identified now, but many times they're not. Many times they're protected, even though there is evidence that something definitely is wrong and needs to be accounted for. You do that enough times, people will react. Will they react the best way? No, they're not going to. Have you ever been in a crowd of angry people? You know, have you ever done something yourself that really wasn't in your best interest because you were just so frustrated and angry? And you know, when I was a kid, I would just destroy my room if I got into a tantrum. I'd knock down – I had little building blocks and things. I would knock them all down. I'd have to build them all up again, but I'd just get angry. I'd kick – what was that? Even if it was something that was mine that was valuable to me, it just – what other outlet did I have? And that is why all this self-righteousness of, I can't understand why these people are destroying their own town. Yeah, well, you've never been in that situation, have you? You've never felt that kind of frustration where you just have to lash out and just be not the person that you really are. The people that really were who they are were the people this morning that were out there with brooms, cleaning up the streets, the people who live there, the good people of Baltimore. And believe me, Baltimore is a great city. It really is. There are so many cool people there, and they work so hard just to get by, and to be treated with such disrespect over and over and over again, and to feel like you're not getting anywhere. That is the epitome of frustration, and that leads people to act out in all sorts of different ways. So no, don't be surprised by that. It will happen. It will completely happen, and you can expect that almost anywhere where people are feeling this kind of frustration. It's a sad fact, but it is a true fact. Why aren't we asking more questions about the guy that got killed in the first place? That should be really the focus of everything, and unfortunately is not. I hear a dial tone. I'm sure you're playing a dial tone for a reason, Kyle.
Yeah, and you want to take phone calls?
Yes, okay, absolutely. But we have to go into delay first.
Yeah, right.
You can't forget that. That's an important part. Our phone number is 631-632-6901. If people have any comments on this, please give us a call.
Yes, please give us a call. And we will talk to you about whatever is on your mind or one of the topics that we brought up here tonight. And
yes.
Share with us...
Don't forget to put that in program, by the way, and don't forget to put that in audition.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
All right. And you got to bring it up, too. If you don't leave it down there, you're going to have a lot of silence on the air. 631-632-6901 is our telephone number. And again, you got to be in audition there for the DigiCart.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay.
It's my first day.
Yeah, it's apparently. 631-632-6901. Cut me off in the middle.
Say it again.
You have me in program. I'm coming up 7 seconds ahead of you. I should be in audition. You should be in audition.
All right. I'm in audition now. I can't hear myself at all.
Okay. You got to move your headphones to audition, too.
Oh, right. Oh.
Okay.
Here we go. Okay, so we're all with you. And we're ready to take phone calls. Please call us 631-632-6901. I didn't even play anything on the DigiCard. It was just...
So we had the silence, didn't we? I knew we were going to have silence.
Yeah, so 631-632-6901, WSB Stony Brook. And so we have this phone thing, and we have a studio and this jalopy of a mixer that very cruddily goes into delay. And it's a complicated process. If you'd like to talk about it or anything else, please give us a call. We have two calls on the line. Hello, you're on WSB.
Hi. Are you guys taking callers? I was just the DJ that was there before Democracy Now!
Oh, fantastic. What would you like to talk about tonight?
How to use the turntable. If you guys are familiar with that.
Okay, that's actually something I can help you with. So it's on the right side of the level meters, the VU meters, in the center of the board, and it's channel 6 and channel 7, and there's little labels that say TT1, TT2.
Wait. You're giving a tutorial on how to use our radio station to another member of our radio station over the air so that the entire listening audience now learns how to do this?
Yes.
Okay. Just checking.
Okay. So anyway, it's TT1, TT2, and channel 6 has to be one, and channel 7 has to be the other, and then you do the mixing from there, and the turntables are on your left. So I hope that helps.
Well, I thank you for your help. I did all of that. And you guys are just talking about it, you know, how to...
Yeah. It's tricky stuff here. And I had a terrible time with delay today. I didn't even play an ID. So we had silence. It was just a cavalcade of errors. But you know what? The important thing is to keep working on it and share information. That's what we're doing. We want to get more information about our new space and design ourselves a really, really awesome... usable studio so that it's a lot easier, but you'll get it. Just look out for the TT1 and TT2.
I totally did it. That's okay. What I'm trying to tell you, but it didn't work out just for
really?
The auditioning, but that's okay.
Oh, for auditioning, it didn't work. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Something else that you were talking about, Baltimore,
yeah,
sure, and I did hear that throughout the years, the way they have been reporting this mm-hmm. is that they haven't been talking, when just regular, you know, white kids go out and burn things and break things after a game.
Oh, those are mischief makers. That's different. Totally different.
Sure.
Oh, this is Pauline.
Oh, thanks, Pauline. Well, thanks for your call, and we're going to get to another call. But that's so true. There's definitely some distinctions there, and a lot of people are wondering about that. So thank you very much.
Right. They haven't called it riots, but okay, I'll let you go, I guess.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, you're welcome. Bye.
So this is learning how to operate a radio station, brought to you by Off the Wall here at WSB. And we've got another call. Hi, you're on WSB. Hello, you're on Off the Wall. You're on the air. Can you hear me?
There's nobody there.
Oh, dear. Well, we lost them. Maybe that person will call us back. 631-632-6901. We just have a couple minutes left here on Off the Wall. We're talking about Baltimore. We're talking about education and the importance of GPA. We're talking about building new radio stations and demanding excellence in all forms of production and broadcasting resources. And that's just one of the many things we talk about here on WSB. We have another phone call. Hello, you're on USB.
Speak up.
Hello, you're on WSB.
Is that phone working?
Well, we may be having some phone difficulties. No, that works. That's
just fine.
Okay, so we're being called again. Hello, you're on WUSB.
Go ahead, Ted. You got me this time?
Hello. Hey, you're on WUSB.
Yes, calling about the riots you were talking about?
Yeah, we were talking about Baltimore. We wanted to see what people were feeling about the coverage or just generally what they thought of it and what's going on.
I'm trying to talk to various people about this thing. Be it in person, online, or what have you, and what seems especially dominant is anytime riots or like public display of dismay at the police brutalizing people, it turns into a race issue when it's really not a race issue. And there's plenty of issues where people with lighter complexions have also either died or become missing in custody.
Uh-huh.
And what is it? We have Albuquerque had the issue last year, I believe it was, the homeless guy that was basically saying, I have a pocket knife, please don't shoot me, and he was playing on some rocks.
Yeah, there was a case of a guy who was whittling in Seattle, and he was brutalized by...
you're saying more attention is being brought based on someone's color when they're killed by the police.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I don't know how do you give equal time to all the victims. I think it's basically up to all of us to have, like, the guy with Cop Watch to be constantly watching what cops are doing and reporting that, regardless of color. And I think we have to react with outrage regardless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's person to person. It's not, you know, just a subset of people. And on top of it, you have the issue of if they're in custody and then the secret prison they found. I'm sorry, what was that? Outside of Michigan? I'm trying to recall where that one was. For the Chicago place.
It's tough to say. There's so many these days. But anyway, we'll let you go. We're going to move on to another call. But thanks a lot for calling in. Okay, that listener had something to say that we can all relate with.
Well, actually, you know, we're kind of out of time, so we have to pop out of delay.
We're not in delay. My goodness. Here we go. Let's.
Okay, you're back live. You just cut yourself off.
That's right. All right. Great. Okay. Sorry about that.
So anyway, So that's if you have things to say to us as far as what's going on in Baltimore and various other things, write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you as well. Hey, you know, we're going on a bike ride this weekend.
Yes.
Well, that's going to be something. 40 miles, the five boroughs, and I guess we'll be reporting back on that next week, maybe even recording something. Any thoughts? You've never done this before.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be fun. It's going to be a nice, pleasant, lots of scenery. I think there's going to be buildings to look at, and I can't wait. It'll be cool to ride in the city.
You know, what I thought was interesting was that we've been training for this over the past past couple of days, and just kind of like what we were talking about before, basically taking classes and like getting better at things. You know, we did only 5 miles, and I was so exhausted only a few days ago, and today we just did it before the show, the same thing, and I feel a lot better. And I think this is something that so many people we talk to say, "Oh, I could never do that. I could never do 40 miles. I could never ride in the five borough." And the thing is, you can. You can if you just push yourself a little bit. You know, push yourself a little bit at first, then a little bit more, and just keep at it. And you'd be surprised. Both mentally, physically, there are so many things that you can do, but you got to make the attempt. You got to just push yourself a little bit. And I think that's something that we try to do all the time, is push each other.
Yeah, it's certainly beautiful weather for bicycling. It's the season, of course. So with that, we will see everyone at another time, and maybe we'll know how to run a radio program.
Man, Baltimore, I think people forgot about how great the city is, how important the city is to the market of music is about to become here, man. I'm just so fed up that everybody's not on the same page and how much this rap game and the market of music here can be blown up so high, man. Like, I want all us just to come together, man, and, like, stand strong. But somebody has to be a leader, you understand, to create this market of music that we about to bring here and this big, powerful movement that we about to bring here, man. I mean, oh, man.
From the city where everybody talk with their hands. Get a 9-to-5, most hustles revolve around grams. Live for the moment, we ain't working no plan. And the favorite saying is, it is what it is. I mean, the kids sit back and try to emulate us. The cops had to regroup, yeah, they ran out of cups. So now they string us up on some cowboy wild style. The saga continues, but meanwhile, grandma, she getting closer to death. Bible in hand, eyes closed, clutching her chest. All the hate in the air make it harder to breathe. And all the cameras in the hood make it hard to believe. Little man riding that 5 and he died for his creed. Yeah, they grow up so quick, nobody clocking his speed. But it's just us, so just be more. And if you ain't feeling that, yeah, this song's for y'all, you hear me? What you know about Baltimore? What you know about Baltimore? Baltimore. What you know about Baltimore? What you know about Baltimore? Baltimore. What you know about Baltimore? What you know about Baltimore? Baltimore. What you know about Baltimore? Uh-huh. What you know about Baltimore? Baltimore. Things have changed since back in the days. just like we all stubborn. We all stuck in our ways. Nobody care no more. Nobody got a heart. Nobody feel no more. They move the blacks to the county on some reconstruction. They say everywhere we go, all we bring is destruction. What? Man, this city was built on our backs, but we lost our history. We know they hide all the facts. Remember when the A-Rags come through with the fruit? Saturday morning, everybody cleaning the stoop. Back when we stuck together and looked out for the youth. Now we over ourselves and y'all know it's the truth. But if we keep this up, we gon' die like this. And if you got kids, they won't survive like this. Look, it's just us, so just be more. And if you ain't feeling that, then this song is for y'all. Let's go. Yeah. What you know about Baltimore? What you know about Baltimore? Baltimore. What you know about Baltimore? What you know about Baltimore? Baltimore. What you know about Baltimore? What you know about Baltimore? Baltimore. What you know about Baltimore? What you know about Baltimore? Baltimore.
People don't realize what they about to do in the city. Got friends in the game, man. It's politicians, man. They tell me everything that's going on in the city, man. And I really feel that we're not taking advantage of all the things that's about to pop off, man. In the next 3 years, I'm starting to see it on TV now about slot machines and stuff like that, man. It's going to be casinos, man. These casinos need music, man. You understand what I'm saying? Why should they go out of town and hire different acts when they got a mess load of people right here that can give them the raw Baltimore? You know, I mean, they tear down buildings everywhere downtown to build up condos, man. And they tear down a lot of different things, like, you know, and they putting up condos. These condos are going to be filled with people, a different market of music of people that's going to be spending money and trying to get to know our culture. You understand our Baltimore culture? You understand what I'm saying? Man, I'm not going nowhere. I'm staying here. A chick told me people in Baltimore never make it. I'm here to say that we are going to make it. And I'm not leaving until my fingers bleed. You understand?